Nothing inspires like a Boab, or a family of Boabs, standing proud above the yellow cane grass and red sandstone in the Kimberley bush. They are an iconic tree, not least because of their varied shape, size, and personality. Majestic is an apt word on the text line, and that has come through this morning. Also, Andrew in Kununurra thinks an embrace of Boabs. And I would agree, that's a lovely collective noun to describe a beautiful collection of Boabs. Sean in Karratha thinks that an opera of Boabs is an ideal collective noun too. These are great words. Keep them coming through. 0448 922 604. Broome author Pat Lowe tonight launches her new edition of her book, The Boab Tree. 21 years after it was first published, and it's been out of print for many, many years. Because there was no digital copy of her manuscript, Pat retyped every word and updated it with new research. New colour images by the Kimberley photographer Damien Kelly have been included, and Welsh illustrator Hugh Crompton's line drawings kept. And as Pat explains, the fascination with Boabs endures.
Most people are fascinated by them because of their character. The big ones are so different from one another and so individual. I think that's part of it. Also, I lived in Africa for a time, and they reminded me so much of where I lived in Tanzania, because there they have, of course, the African one, which is a different species.
Tell me about Grandmother Boab Tree, a tree that you've been visiting for many years.
Yes, that's up near Logue River. She's the biggest one of several, many Boabs, actually, that grow in a grove there. And you can walk around, and they're all different sizes, and some are very young, some are old, and she's the oldest. So I think of her as probably being the progenitor of the others. So I used to climb her sometimes and look at the animals that were living in her, because, you know, that's the other thing about big old Boabs. They become like a little ecosystem. All the hollows get filled up with different little animals, insects, all sorts of things. I went up late last year, it was, I think, and she was looking a bit sad, but still in one piece. But lots of cavities and holes and branches had fallen off. So she changed each time, you know. I could recognise certain branches and then they were gone and so on. And then we went back only in a couple of months later and completely collapsed. Just one little branch sticking up.
Mm. Utterly collapsed.
Yeah, really collapsed.
How old do you think this tree might have been?
We just don't know. We just can't guess.
Pat, it's been 20 years since the release of the original The Boab Tree book. You've also had to work on updating some of the scientific information around Boab trees. What new information have you had to include and learn about?
Originally, there was a neat little theory that certain baobabs, there are eight altogether, six are in Madagascar, one in Africa, one in Australia, and they're all different species. And the theory was that the Australian one was related most closely to one of the Madagascan ones because they look a little bit similar and because they seem to both be pollinated by insects and so on. But genetic work has been done which suggests that we're actually probably more closely related to the African one.
And certainly it's still unclear as to how Andersonia gregori, the Kimberley Boab, even came to be in Australia.
Well, all we know is that it evolved here because there are no other examples of it anywhere else in the world. So it evolved here from an original proto-Boab, if you like, which may or may not have been the African one or similar to the African one or another one that was kind of the grandmother of all of them. Who knows?
The grandmother of grandmothers of grandmothers of Boabs. And that's the thing with Boabs. They're like families, aren't they? They're like individual humans in a way.
Yes, especially round about Logue River you see that. As I said, you know, all different age groups. And also sometimes you get a tree, that a mature tree, and it has young ones all around it, almost in a family circle, because obviously the pods have dropped and cracked and the seeds have germinated. And it's a wonderful thing to be able to see that here, because you do not see it in Madagascar. In Madagascar, there is very little regeneration of most of the baobabs. It's very sad. The ones that are most familiar in Madagascar are in the avenue of the baobabs. And there's no regrowth whatsoever because the land has been cleared around it. People harvest the pods. I call them pods because that's the correct term. They're not really nuts. And also cattle eat them and so on.
One of the other lovely aspects of this book, Pat, is there's new colour photographs that have been included, many of them by Damien Kelly, a renowned Kimberley photographer. But also the updated edition has kept a lot of Hugh Compton's beautiful illustrations. Tell me about the drawings in the book.
Yes, well, Hugh spent a lot of time in Australia and in Madagascar, and he was completely obsessed for a while with baobabs. Anyway, he was coming here, and I said I was doing a book, and he got quite excited about the idea of doing some drawings. So when he was travelling across the Kimberley, he did lots of drawings of baobabs that took his fancy.
And they've played such an important role too in many Aboriginal people's traditions and survival, and their marker points. They are features of the landscape on so many levels for particularly Aboriginal people of the north.
Absolutely, yes. I mean, in the wet season, they'd be the best shade around. And there are carvings on some of the trees. I haven't actually been able to find any Aboriginal carvings, but some people have souvenired them, unfortunately. But also, they're old now, I suppose, and get damaged by fire and so on. But there are some remaining from historical times, from European explorers.
How are baobabs pollinated?
The first person, David Baum, did some research. He was from Harvard at the time. He did some research on pollination, and he saw hawk moths after dusk. They come to feed. Now, what you need to know is that the flowers of a baobab open at night. That's when they're at their best, and they only last for the one night, really. And in the morning when you see them, they still look lovely, but they're actually past their best. The time to see them is at night. So they were thought to be the major pollinator, but of course other things visit them as well.
Fruit bats, you've got maybe possums, other little marsupials, insects. There's a wealth of creatures after dark that probably adore the baobab flowers.
Yes, exactly, and they're quite sweet. Oh, that was the other thing, they're quite sweet smelling. Not strong, but sweet. Whereas the African one is not so sweet to us, but the bats like it.
It always strikes me that you've got this quite rugged, very sturdy tree thriving in harsh conditions, and yet the most delicate white ballerina tutu-like flowers. Yes. It's a lovely contrast.
It is, isn't it? Yes. They look so ancient, don't they? And rugged, yes.
Pat Lowe, the author of The Baobab Tree.